the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Secret Podcast. It's been a little while. This is episode 358. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. Normally, we would have Seth Cox on as the co-host. However, he is vacationing, and so we do get a treat. A special guest from us tonight, I'm recording on a Tuesday night, is Blake Murphy, contributor over at RevengeOfTheBirds.com, and also one of the host of the Revenge of the Birds podcast. So it's kind of a crossover episode like we had at one point last year. Blake, nice to have you on. We had been on hiatus a little bit because of, you know, the slow part of the offseason, graduations, and I was out of the country, but we finally have some real kind of stuff coming out because we've wrapped up OTAs, mandatory mini camps began on Tuesday, and we are officially at the end of the off season. So the Cardinals will have another practice on Wednesday, which by the time you hear this will have already happened, and then they will be off until training camp. So, well, first of all, thanks for filling in for Seth, Blake. It's a pleasure to have you on. I mean, we talk often in our group chat, in our group text that we've got, but how are things going for you?
It's doing well, Jess. Like you said, it feels like that the off season has ended, but it really, there's just been every week, it feels like there's something new that would happen with the Cardinals to talk about. And it'll probably be, I think, nice to, you know, compress a lot of the last couple of weeks into one episode and then, you know, actually get a true off season break, hopefully, since the, and that I've been doing well overall. Just been kind of getting used and plugged in as far as not just with the job, but also just trying to be able to take a little bit of a break from the sports era in general. It was a very busy and unfortunately for us Arizona sports fans, kind of been more a disappointing time for some of the teams that made the playoffs this last season. Taking a little step away from all of that, I think, is always good for the soul.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and get started with the show. What we have is kind of the wrap up, the off-season wrap-up show, and we've got some major topics to discuss. One is that of Rodney Hudson and his absence. Going to talk about Kyler Murray and the deal that could be coming, the fact that he showed up to a little bit of OTAs and also for minicamp. We saw Isaiah Simmons practicing at safety. Zaven Collins made some comments that maybe raised some eyebrows, and we'll talk a little bit about moves that the Cardinals might still need to make off-season, winners and losers, and kind of address the cornerback position as well. So let's go ahead and start it with Rodney Hudson. So the biggest thing, the big news that came out of minicamp on Tuesday was the fact that Rodney Hudson was not present. And there were actually, I noticed when I was there at practice, you didn't have Rodney Hudson, you didn't have Max Williams, you didn't have Zach Allen. Now, the thing that we knew, Max is rehabbing after his knee injury. Zach Allen is still recovering from ankle. He probably had ankle surgery after the season. But then Hudson was the interesting one because Cliff Kingsbury said they're working through some stuff. He was asked directly if it was excused. It is not. What's the level of concern that you have with no Rodney Hudson in mandatory minicamp?
I think it starts with when you look at players and the age, for the most part, with Arizona, that's kind of, I think, the thing you look for with Hudson. He's an older center. You traded for a 32-year-old last season, giving up a third-round pick. I think really ultimately the thing is, at least whenever there's an issue or problem, you always want to break down, well, what's the cause? Last year, obviously, you know, Malcolm Butler at least had a bit of a tizzy with the Cardinals, but it was, from what we can tell, that he wasn't going to necessarily be guaranteed a starting position for the team. You also look at least at how most of the other players, when they don't show up, it's contract related. Well, Rodney Hudson had gotten a nice extension.
3 years, $30 million.
Three years, $30 million. He's got a $10 million base salary this year. So you're talking at least about, it's not like that there's, you know, pushing for more money or that it's too cheap for the most part. He's still under contract for next year. And Cardinals, with the restructuring, are going to push a little bit of cap money down the road. And it's not like it's a long-term, you know, 6 or 7 year deal where he won't get to hit free agency. Like, he's at least going to be able to hit a chance at 30, 34, 35, I think you should say, to be able to go back and to be able to, you know, if he wants to keep playing, there are teams that are always going to be willing to do that. So, and it comes down to then, is it something in his personal life, something with the team, or is it simply an area of looking at him as an older player and essentially looking at other older players the Cardinals have had? The one that comes to mind is Larry Fitzgerald, who essentially would not be on the field unless he was, for the most part, required to be. And even still would, you know, be having excused from practice 2 or 3 days a week. I think it's probably going to be one or the other at this point of either maybe you look at he just had a daughter. You can also, I think, just look at just his play last year. For the most part, I know a lot of people don't read into the PFF grades, and I think for the most part, the impact that Hudson made in a lot of ways, I think, was not necessarily seen as like an all-pro on the field, but more just the mental aptitude that he brought of being able to be in the right place at the right time. He still suffered with injuries. He ended up having COVID, went on the COVID list, missed, I think, a couple games at least at center. Maybe that all is kind of weighing on him as far as just coming on for retirement, and maybe all of that still is true, and he's just wanting to kind of take a little bit of extra time away from the facility. I think that the reason why you would be concerned ultimately is it makes the Cardinals offseason, you know, reported moves make a little bit more sense as far as maybe why they were looking so heavily at interior offensive linemen in the early rounds of the NFL draft.
Right. So the first thing that comes, like, when I got texts from a few people, like, my gosh, is he retiring? Maybe. Maybe. That might be a possibility. The other thing is, and Kelvin Beachum was on the radio today on Tuesday, and Beachum made it was some comments that he made that he was taking care of his family. He just had a kid. He's also got another, so I guess he's got two young kids, and he's being a father. Which leads me to think, so maybe he is considering retirement. Or maybe it's simply, as a veteran in the league, he doesn't want to be part of the offseason program. He doesn't need it. He's been playing long enough. You know, basically, they did the same thing last year. If you recall, last year, players basically forced teams to cut down their offseason programs. The Cardinals were all set to have their 10 OTA practices and 3 minicamp practices. And when the NFLPA was kind of stepping in and the Cardinals, as their players came together, they condensed that down and said, okay, we're going to have 3 OTAs and I think there's just 2 days of mini camp. And they were going to do that consecutively. And that's when they got some decent participation. It might simply be with he wants to give his body more time. And it's clearly something that the team isn't thrilled about because they didn't excuse him, which means he's going to be subject to as much as, you know, up to $90,000 in fines. But since they haven't made any moves at center yet, it leads me to believe that they anticipate ultimately that he will report to camp. But it does make it more interesting that perhaps that they thought this was a possibility, because if we look back at draft night in round one, now obviously they traded their pick for Marquise Brown. But John Gambadoro here locally reported that had they kept the pick, that their pick would have been Tyler Linderbaum, the center. And then in the second round, and through a number of sources, including their Cardinals flight plan, had they not... So it came down to 2 players in the second round. And Trey McBride was not their first pick. The one that they wanted was Nebraska center Cam Jurgens, and everyone around the team were like, why would they be drafting a center when they've got Rodney Hudson? It makes a lot more sense now. Kelvin Beachum made it sound like things will get sorted out in the next couple of weeks. It'd be interesting to say if they're going to sort it out in the next couple of weeks, whether that means retirement or ultimately the team's going to decide, all right, you're all good. Just come to camp healthy, and we'll go from there, and we'll have a plan for you so that you save your body, because Hudson did break down over the course of the season with the injuries and the COVID. Now, COVID, that was just whatever, that dealing with that across the team and across the league, but Yeah, I don't know what to think about that. So, aside from, let's think about this now. So, if there is no Hudson, the Cardinals look highly unprepared for the coming season. We know that Billy Price was in for a workout, but hasn't signed. Sean Harlow has been the guy getting snaps. Justin Pugh has also been getting snaps, as has rookie Lasita Smith, the guy that drafted in the sixth round. What if Hudson decides to retire? What do you think the Cardinals should do?
Yeah, that's a tough area for the most part, because like you said, it feels like maybe there's some people have a bit of regret just from looking at the last the draft year and being able to bring in someone who's a center. But even with the idea of, if you take it, let's say you go down that rabbit hole, if you take a Tyler Linderbaum, if you, you know, I think let's say that you end up making a move to get a Cam Jurgens, they're probably not going to be starting year one for the most part if there's going to be a capable player who's a veteran on the roster, just with part of the mentality that we've seen from the Cardinals offensive line coach. We've really not seen them.
Don't. That's the thing. They don't have a capable veteran behind Hudson.
And that's where I think it becomes tricky. So then you're going to say, you're going to look to the free agent market. It is interesting that before the draft, Michael Bidwell did talk about how he felt like that there was going to be not just the draft of bringing players in, but also throughout the rest of the offseason, such as with like June, July. And the Cardinals do have, at least obviously, a bit of cap space that they've got currently available due to the Jordan Phillips post June 1st release. They have the ability, if they extend some players, to get a bit in. I think what they should look at for the most part is probably a combination of looking at free agency if you need to. Now, the biggest thing obviously is, as we've seen with the Cardinals, a lot of times they'll have those time signs and they'll wait to see what the status is of some of those young players and other guys are in camp. And then they'll go out and make a move. Like a great example, a couple years back, I remember when they brought Jermaine Gresham in on a time sign. They even made, I think, that last minute trade for the most part in 2016 to get a starting corner, just because they went through and were like, all right, we're really not prepared like we thought we were going to be for this position. But they let the guys who were on the roster kind of get the first crack at it. That makes me think that there's probably the two guys who've been working out at center in replacement, which would be, one is a draft pick in Lasita Smith, who they've liked, and the other is obviously kind of a little bit of a surprise here with Justin Pugh, who I think we talked about this pre-show, has played essentially every position in his NFL career on the offensive line except for center. And he had some interesting comments today, I think, that you took in about potentially moving there to extend his career. And I got to think the Cardinals would look for that spot first, or maybe even sign an offensive guard to, you know, take Pugh's spot as a starter. And then that may be the first step they would do, is see if that's something that'd be possible for him to be able to take over.
And honestly, if based on where we're at, Pugh wouldn't be a bad choice. And like, obviously he hasn't played center. He was their emergency center last year, but he himself said he thinks he's kind of priced himself out of the guard position. And now entering year 10, he said that one, that the center position is not as physically demanding as guard, but he said it's very mentally, it is much more demanding. The one thing we know about Pugh, he is a very smart player. He's been in the league a long time. He's one of the smartest guys on the offensive line. He did a good job last year. Cliff said he probably had his best year of his career last year. And like, he sees a potential of extending his career. He thinks that he could play. And he even said, like, this was came out of the press conference today, is that how the contract thing looked, because he was not happy about the cut and pay cut last year. He thought he was going to retire. And so there was a kind of a price break for him. And when he told Steve Keim, this is what it'd take to come back, Keim said, okay. And that turned out to be, what, $5.5 million? Because
$7.5 million cap number, I think, actually. So he's got a pretty good deal for a 1-year deal you're talking about,
right,
for a 32-year-old left guard.
And I think he understands that he probably wouldn't have gotten that up in the open market, which is why, so this is the amount it'll take to come back. And if not, I'm happy with my career. I'll retire. But if he can extend his career a couple more years by learning to play center, I think based on if he can play center, that's the best option for the Cardinals because he knows the system. It wouldn't be someone like Billy Price coming in or another vet coming in who has to learn everything in a shortened amount of time. And the fact that you've got guys that you've got someone like Justin Murray on the bench who the Cardinals view him as a guy that they'd be comfortable starting. And so being able to slide Justin Murray into that position if need be, I think they would be okay. Obviously, it would put the it would put them in a slightly different situation in terms of depth on the offensive line, but it would then open things up for one of like their younger players to go on. Like they've got Lasita Smith, and I think he's probably going to make the team based on the fact that they're working him at center right now. But that would potentially open up the door for like maybe Josh Miles to come back, or even Marquise Hayes, their last draft pick to roll in. But that would be a big blow because you recall kind of how everyone talked about Hudson, just how valuable he was to the offense, to the offensive line, to Kyler Murray. I don't know if it was a concerted effort to bring his name up. Maybe it's because he wasn't thrilled that he got traded to the Cardinals, and I don't know. But they made sure at every opportunity last year to praise Hudson for his value to that offensive line.
Absolutely, and I think you could see it too in some of the games. Obviously, the injury that took place in the Niners game, the Cardinals were able to get by, were still undefeated. But I think back to like the first game of the year, the Titans game. Titans had an all-out blitz. Murray credited his center and Hudson for pointing that out. They had a quick slant to Hopkins, and I believe either, I don't know if that went for a touchdown, but it for sure at least set it up where it was on a clutch third down conversion, and it was just the spot of veteran center, understanding or knowing, and helping out the young quarterback to where it made Kyler Murray look great. And that's, I think, the best compliment you can give about a center is if they can make their quarterback look good, that's probably the best thing you can say about an offensive lineman. And like you said, I think that the hope is that he wouldn't retire. Obviously, it was not his best season last year. He's had a higher seasons before, but it's also a place, at least, that we've seen the Cardinals when they've, you know, lost a guy like an A.Q. Shipley, who was kind of that stalwart guy in the middle of the field and had to pivot, and it's harder to be able to find those type of guys, and it shows why I think they were so interested in bringing a guy in even to sit for a year or two to then take over and be maybe that long-term guy for Kyler Murray. It is interesting. I think the one name that I thought was as perhaps an interesting possibility was that they did meet with Billy Turner earlier in this offseason. That's, I think, news since the last time you guys had your show. 30-year-old guard. He's essentially kind of
Billy Price, right? Because Billy Turner signed with.
Was it Billy? Oh, that's right. Billy Turner signed. He's with the Broncos. Billy Price. So, yeah, Billy Price is interesting as far as like he does have experience at least in playing that role. And it's not that he's been at least great by any stretch, but
He was supposed to be really good.
Yeah. He was a former first-round pick, was taken in, and what's interesting, at least, is if you look at his type of story, he was a Cincinnati Bengal, ended up, I believe, getting traded or dealt? I think it was actually, no, he was, traded to the Giants. So you're talking about, like, a former Giants offensive lineman who's, you know, played different positions and really might need a kind of a fresh start. Cardinals have two other guys that are just like that on their roster already. You've got
Pugh and Will Hernandez
played on there right next to him. That's that familiarity. And you also Justin Pugh, who obviously was a former Giant at least, but that's always interesting, I think, as far as, you know, it's pretty easy to be able to see if the Cardinals did decide that they wanted to sign someone like Price, who has at least that first round, I think, level and talent. See if you could at least put him with Coach Kugler and he could do a little bit of work, because that's essentially what they're banking on from this Will Hernandez signing. And maybe you then see a different look offensive line. We thought you could see, you know, Pugh back at left guard, Hernandez at right guard, and Hudson's in the center. Maybe you end up seeing a Justin Pugh in the center. You end up bringing someone else in, at least at that guard spot, and Will Hernandez perhaps ends up being that, you know, main left guard for Kyler Murray. It's going to be interesting to see what goes on over the over the course of the summer, if the Cardinals do end up signing a player before training camp, or if we end up kind of seeing them start the year and Justin Pugh is your guy. Because I don't think that there is a worst case scenario option for the most part. I do feel like, though, if you're going to have to go from Justin Pugh and there is an injury that takes place, going from him to Lasita Smith, that may be the one cause for at least getting another body similar to Max Garcia in there to take over in that role, who's a veteran, if Hudson is going to retire.
Absolutely. Coming on next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk. Let's talk about Kyler Murray. He was in minicamp. He even showed up to a little bit of OTAs. What does it mean? That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. Kyler Murray, he wasn't there for all of OTAs. He wasn't there for the first week. He wasn't there for at least for the part of last week that was open. But he did show up for part of the second week at least. And as expected, he was at mandatory minicamp, even though he doesn't have a contract. You know, a lot of people thought that that might have been a surprise. I didn't. However, the one thing that was good to see was not only was he there, but he was on the field doing work. It's different than like the Chandler Jones situation a year ago when he reported, but he did not participate on the field because he wanted a contract extension. So my take is that this was never really, you know, maybe some of the absence from OTAs was contract related. It was the classic not showing up to the voluntary part because, and to be honest, there's a reason why players do that and why agents tell their players not to show up to the voluntary part, because we see injuries every year and it ended up not being serious. But there was a quarterback, who was the CJ Beathard, who went down with a leg injury in a voluntary workout, and it ended up not being serious. But you've got a franchise quarterback, you've got a quarterback in your contract talks. Anytime injuries happen, that affects negotiation. So I never thought that it was, I never felt like the talk of Kyler not showing up was going to, because he doesn't have a new deal, I felt like it was overblown. I always felt that he was going to be here, but Cliff did say today, and it was interesting because he really wants Kyler to get that deal done because he wants him there on day one of training camp. And we're like, wait, you think he wouldn't, you don't know if he'd be in training camp? Like, I don't know, but that's what I want him to be there, and I don't want him to have to worry about that. Cliff also has made it sound like we're about to give him, he's like, wait, does that mean a contract is imminent? What we're about to give him might mean next week, next month. But I wasn't ever overly concerned because ultimately Kyler wants to win. And you can't win when you don't play.
Right. And I think also the other area, like you said, of why it's been overblown is partially just because the expectations for quarterback are just a lot heavier than they are for other players. And then when you've had an off season that's been kind of tumultuous, you know, you focus, oh, Kyler Murray's not there at OTAs. Everyone's focusing on
other
that
players not at OTAs. Oh, yeah. Nick Bosa, Deebo Samuel, DK Metcalf, who was also an unexcused absence from mandatory minicamp. Lamar Jackson showed up for minicamp but wasn't part of OT. Like, that, there are players all over the league who did not show up for the voluntary part of the offseason. And it appears only Kyler and Lamar are the divas in the NFL.
Oh gosh, yeah, and both of those guys were there for the most part. And what's interesting, like you said, is it seems like it was expected that Kyler would be there, and some people said, oh, there's maybe some surprise that Lamar had showed up, but there was not really any type of talk even for the Cardinals players about how DJ Humphries hadn't been there for the OTAs.
Rodney Hudson hasn't been there at all.
Yeah, Rodney Hudson hasn't been there at all. But even like Marquise Brown was not there, and the Cardinals had just traded for him. You'd think he'd want to be getting together with his teammates, and you find out, oh, well, he was working out with Kyler in Dallas. It's not like they're just, you know, sitting back there cracking open a few beers and, you know, getting some Twitch streams on. They were actually working out together, and that connection is going to be crucially important through the first 6 weeks to be able to get up to speed quick, because your offense is going to have to be able to feature that speed, knowing that, you know, you've got AJ Green back another year, you've got Rondale Moore hopefully coming into his own. But really, that Hollywood Brown trade, that you gave up your first round pick for a guy, and part of the reason why you did is because of that connection going back to college and that relationship, and he wasn't there. So I think, like you said, a lot of the areas of just the criticism has so far been overblown. And Kyler, to his credit, he probably could be making up more of a storm about some of this. He's at least gone through with the, you know, what's been expected of being able to go through with the team. He's definitely shown just from, you know, he always likes to show every year, it seems like, that there's always a new kind of Instagram photo of him getting a little bit more cut or being able to put on a bit more weight. I'll be curious, you know, if he, you know, is able to put on a little bit more body armor or protection, at least for, you know, not trying to miss some of those games. The question as far as with the contract, it does feel like you said that right now, the way the Cardinals have talked and the way that we've seen things seem to die down from Kyler's end, it feels like it's not going to be an if, but more of a when. And I think that's kind of the area, at least, is this going to be a when as far as, you know, it happens, you know, by the time this podcast comes out? Or is it going to be you get into camp, you get further to camp, you get a little bit closer to the season and preseason? And it feels kind of in a lot of ways that part of that is not quite known for the most part yet, because I think at least what I interpreted Cliff's comments was, is he would prefer it, the Cardinals get it done sooner than later, just so he's not asked about it.
Not, absolutely. Honestly. And it feels like Steve Keim is just trying not to set a precedent. I'm like, if you're going to sign your quarterback long term, why does it matter when it is? And the truth is, financially, they probably should have taken the deal that Eric Burkhardt offered back in January, February, because kind of the whispers were there was like $40 million a year. He's probably looking at about $46 million per year on average now, thanks to those quarterback deals that went through. So while Steve Keim, I think part of it was just stubbornness in saying, it's not time yet. We've got free agency, we've got the draft. Well, if you've already got a good draft of a contract that the agent gave him, let's be honest. There is no reason to not get it done earlier if it means avoiding bad press, which the Cardinals have had a lot of this offseason. I don't understand, other than, hey, everyone else did theirs in July, we're going to wait till July.
Right. And a lot of this obviously goes just with how the season ended. You know, like you look at halfway through the season, the Cardinals are 10-2. You know, people are like, all right, pay the man yesterday. And then with you see how the season ended. On the counterpart, the other quarterbacks who got their deals after year three, like you think of, you know, I think it was Jared Goff got one. Carson Wentz had one. He's been an MVP candidate. They had playoff wins. And that's the biggest difference. It's that they had playoff wins. It'll be interesting as far as the time frame. It does seem like, at least to me, I'd be curious. Kyler turns 24 at the beginning of August. Will he have a deal by then? I think will be a big question, because then you start to get into the preseason games and the rest of the season. I think that at least at this point, I would expect that there may be something similar to, you know, I think a couple years ago, it was Arians, Palmer, Fitzgerald, they kind of got little 1-year extensions kind of added on for the most part. And I believe they're already in camp at that point. It was just kind of more of a, you know, like you said, it was unprecedented that Kyler would ask for a deal that early, but it also is more of a spot where the other quarterbacks, like you said, had playoff wins. So when they got their deals in July and August, it was more of like considered inevitable. A lot of people have had a lot of debate about whether Kyler should have that contract or not, but at the end of the day, the market value that he has for it, if the Cardinals aren't paying him $46 million, there's another team out there that's more than happy to pay $46 million. That's the way that quarterback play, and I would say even high level quarterback play goes in the NFL.
There's probably more than a dozen teams that would give up 3 first round picks for Kyler. I mean, we saw Cleveland do it for Deshaun Watson, who was in a hot mess of trouble.
Yeah,
and give him all that guaranteed money, and Kyler doesn't come with any of that off the field baggage, like zero. He's all ball, like all ball, and nothing else.
Yep, and there's less injury issues, I think, as well, too. Like, Deshaun's got 2 ACL tears, and they're very similar, I think, at least, as far as, like, I think if you took Kyler's career and Deshaun's career and flipped one of those around, you know, like, as far as win totals, as far as, like, yards for performance, like, being kind of in MVP categories, there's maybe not been essentially the highest elite level like we've seen out of Mahomes or out of Josh Allen, but those two guys, for the most part at least, are similar. And like you said, the biggest difference, of course, being Kyler off field is not a guy who's going to be, you know, visiting 66 plus different therapists for the most part, or having all sorts of other crazy drama that we're finding out with Watson. So like you said, it is one of those places where I think it'll be, for a lot of Cardinals fans, amidst what's been a really rough offseason, just being able to have some of that security of having Kyler Murray tied to the organization long term will be something that I think fans will see as a relief. And I would expect that deal to happen. I think the question, of course, is it going to be before or after that birthday? Or is it, you know, maybe that's a birthday gift that they have planned for Kyler Murray. That would be kind of what I would see as kind of the day. And that would give the GM enough, I guess you could say, you know, we didn't cave too early. We stuck to the precedent. It would at least allow both the Cardinals and Kyler to be able to come away and say that the contract and the time that it was signed was a win.
And the one thing, though, is that camp will have started before the start of August. So
yep.
Cliff won't love that if that ends up being the case. But coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best era of Cardinals talk on the web, an interesting observation about Isaiah Simmons and potentially a change in his role. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast of SRF Cardinals Talk on the web. And on Tuesday, during the open part of practice, when we're looking around, seeing where guys are and checking out to see, I noticed that number 9 was not with the linebackers. I'm like, wait, is Simmons not here? No. He was doing drills with the safeties. Something that I wasn't the only one to note. And I know that on one of the other podcasts that we know over PHNX, that was a big topic on Tuesday on their show. Are they moving Isaiah Simmons to safety, where he originally was a defensive back at Clemson? Some wondered whether he would be better at safety than a linebacker. That raised a little bit of concern, or at least raises eyebrows as to how he's going to be used. What do you see? I see this as nothing more than, hey, we saw him in training camp last year doing some drills with the safeties simply because of some of the roles that he plays. It's good for him to keep sharp on those particular drills. But what are some of the questions that come up with that observation?
Yeah, well, it's weird that also that it'd be like the first day of mandatory minicamp. You have a lot of
during the open part of practice. So yep. The first thing you're going to say, hey, Simmons is a safety.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what's unique. And, you know, coming out, I think, with the draft, a lot of the, you know, some of the comparisons of just some of the scouting or even people in the scouting community saw him as almost like, if you wanted to say that he was like a supersized Tyrann Mathieu as far as how he was used at Clemson, it was a guy that, you know, during the national championship game slid back and played the safety position when there was an injury, rushed off of the edge, kind of fit some of that mold of what you'd expect for a safety to move around in. But in a lot of the cases, the Cardinals are in a spot where, unless they end up essentially sliding, you know, Nick Vigil right into where Jordan Hicks' role was, or have him and Collins and Hicks there, safety is like the one spot that you at least feel very confident about on the Cardinals defensively, because you've got a Pro Bowler there in Buda Baker. You've got Jalen Thompson, who maybe he ends up playing a little bit more slot corner this year, depending on how their cornerback situation works. But really, you've got those two guys there, and there's probably at least good enough depth for the most part, at least, that you're able to see that it feels a little bit odd, to say the least, but perhaps some of that is simply recognizing that if some of your best skill set is ultimately as a defensive back, maybe there's going to be a few less snaps there at linebacker than we would normally think. Maybe similar to how, you know, Hassan Reddick, when he finished his transition to becoming an edge rusher, he ended up playing some coverage snaps off of the line, trying to cover tight ends off the line, trying to use some of that athleticism. I think on one hand, I'd say it's a solid point from Vance Joseph to not simply, you know, stick Isaiah Simmons and say, all right, we're going to take the skinny player who runs a 4-3 and make him the Mike linebacker right here in the middle of the field. You're at least showing some flexibility, but I do think that fans are at least a little bit wondering, because they keep saying again and again he's a linebacker, and first day of practice and minicamp, he's working out the safeties, takes a photo with Buda Baker and Jalen Thompson, I think, posing with them after practice. I think that you could say that it's a positive for flexibility, but in some regard, the fact that he hasn't had a consistent role to play throughout his career, I'm not sure how much of that's hurt him thus far. Maybe just being able to get him playing with the safeties one day, playing with the linebackers another, maybe that will finally be able to unlock some of the hybrid style player that the Cardinals drafted in the top 10 a few years ago, since this is very crucially important, I would say, year three for him to be able to not just be able to progress and to become an adequate player, but to be able to be a star and a guy that doesn't come off the field. You know, the last time that we saw him, played 33% of the snaps in the Rams game. They had a whole lot of their backup linebacker in over him. And that's something I know that a lot of Cardinals fans are looking at. And you don't ever really want to see a guy you drafted in the top 10 in a playoff game like that just not be on the field. And maybe this is a way that the Cardinals can get him on the field more often.
Yeah. Oh, and he's been used in multiple roles. So we saw him at Mo, the inside linebacker position. They call that the Mo. We've seen them at the outside linebacker position in base downs last year where he's playing on the edge. And I will say, while we didn't like how he looked there, the defense was really good early in the season when he played that base position. He did play a little safety last year. And he talked about himself, like, he likes playing multiple positions. That's what he's always done. And so he likes, and for what he wants to accomplish, he likes the different role. Like, out there at the Sam at the outside linebacker position, it allows him to rush the passer, which gives him the opportunity to get to the quarterback. Playing some safety allows him to play it back and get his hands on the ball more. But listening to him talk, as he spoke, he addressed the media after practice, it sounded like he was definitely a linebacker. And the things that I, without going into detail of talking about things that I can't talk about, it looked like a linebacker to me. He was just doing drills with that. But it's interesting because, you know, I know that in our group text, there's the question, like, this would be such a Cardinals thing to do if they're preparing him to be a safety next year and letting Jalen Thompson walk. Interesting. It raises that question. But I think what is possibly more likely is maybe he will have more of a role at safety, and it's because of their situation at corner. And I was telling you this before the show. So you've got Byron Murphy and you've got Marco Wilson. Obviously, Byron Murphy is better at slot, but if he ends up having to play boundary, they do have options in the slot because Jalen Thompson can play in the slot. We've seen Buda Baker do it. He's not the best at it. It's not his best role, but he was a full-time slot guy in 2018. They've got Antonio Hamilton, but he is more of a special teams guy. So one way they could maximize their personnel is in nickel packages. They slide JT down to the slot. They move Simmons back to safety, pairing him with Buda. And then that allows them to bring on Nick Vigil to pair with Zaven Collins in the middle of the field, thus sort of maximizing the players that they have and that they sign. Now, I'm going to say, you know, Nick Vigil's salary that they signed him to is no guarantee that he's going to be more than a backup, but he was, in a way, a priority in the offseason. So that is, I could see that happening. While Simmons is still a linebacker, they may play him at safety more than in the past, depending on what they need Jalen Thompson doing.
Right. And I think that may be the best case as far as the Cardinals, as far as when defense goes. You know, I think back to the Seattle Seahawks game that ended the season where the Cardinals were down to like corner five, corner six. They actually had Isaiah Simmons back there in coverage a lot, and his flexibility allowed them to be able to at least, you know, cover a bit more. Now, obviously, there was a couple of blown plays that were made at least, and it's hard to, you know everything as far as responsibility. But just being able to, like you said, have the capacity of, if you're going to run a hybrid defense, you're going to want to ultimately, you know, disguise your looks where people aren't sure, is Isaiah going to be dropping back into coverage or rushing from the edge, or as Vance Joseph has loved to do, be able to blitz and be able to bring a lot of guys in overload protections. And that's something that may be even more important now that we see with Chandler Jones on a new team, with the Cardinals not really going out and making it a priority to sign and pay a high-end edge rusher. Maybe we end up seeing them in a spot where Isaiah Simmons will have to take on a lot more responsibility in coverage, just knowing that you're going to be able to have to use him all over the field like that type of a chess piece. And you can't just, you know, put Isaiah Simmons as an edge rusher and have him go at it for the most part, because that's just not the way that Vance's defense works. I think I even joked in the – I think it was like in hindsight, wondered in our group chat, if, all right, maybe the Cardinals could look at it. What if it's Jalen that they're looking to pay, the younger guy? And then I – looked up and remembered that Buda Baker's only 26 years old. It's like, okay, I know that. He's they're keeping him for a long time. He's still a really young guy in the prime of his career. So it is interesting to see that they're playing that often. And you know, the easy comparison that I thought of, at least, that was interesting, but the Cardinals previously had a similar defensive mindset where, you know, they had three safeties in the Todd Bowles era on the field for a lot of the snaps, for the most part, back when Tony Jefferson played some of that hybrid role. You wonder if,
and that was because of Tyrann Mathieu, because they had him playing the slot,
and they had him playing the slot, and so maybe end up looking in a position where, all right, like this is the place that I think we talked about. We could see you take Jalen Thompson as a safety, you move him down into the slot. Suddenly, now you actually have Byron, you've got Marco, and you've got Jalen Thompson at least. Obviously, the Cardinals would probably be well ado to bring in another veteran defensive back, but you could probably make that work as far as having Isaiah be one of those other safety roles, being able to kind of play with his size. Obviously, you know, he's able to take on running backs, watch quarterbacks, and then you've got Buda Baker manning the middle of the field with that closing speed. That may be one of those places where it may not be optimal for the Cardinals, but I could 100% see that working, where you're then able to have, you know, your two best cornerbacks be able to man the outside, and a guy who can play the slot effectively being able to be in that spot. It's not optimal, but it would be functional, I think, for Arizona to be able to do.
Coming in next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, special for Cardinals Talk on the Web, let's talk a little bit about Zaven Collins, who spoke to the media last week. That's a kind of interesting comments. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Zaven Collins, all eyes are on the second-year linebacker, as he was drafted a year ago to be the week one starting Mike linebacker, replacing Jordan Hicks, and it never happened. Jordan Hicks had a solid year. He made it so that Zaven couldn't crack the lineup, but they cut Hicks, and Hicks went on to sign with the Minnesota Vikings, and so the job is now Zaven's to lose. But he did make it sound like his role isn't set. He's obviously, I can say this, what I know, he has been working at Mike. He's been working at that Jordan Hicks position. He's been calling plays, he's been lining guys up. That was something that Isaiah talked about on Tuesday. But when Zaven said, we've been doing a lot of things, whether I'm in the middle or whether I'm somewhere in the middle not calling it, it's kind of an interesting, because that was the role he had last year. So he ended up being the third inside linebacker, at least early in the year, and then was overtaken by Tanner Vallejo, where he was the third inside backer for particular roles, basically when they used Simmons at the Sam. And so he wasn't asked to do any play calling. Leave that comment that he basically said that it's going to come down to camp, is we're doing a lot of things. Don't know exactly whether it's going to be this or this, but they'll have to go in the training camp. It raised some question, because they drafted him to be a Mike. That's what he played in college, and it's casting some doubt. Is there any level of concern that you have that he's not going to be ready to fill that role this year?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to, he was more of a raw player coming out of a small school, but he really seemed to have not just the instincts you could see in a Mike and the size especially, but there was a lot of questions coming out. People wondered, because he lined up in multiple places for Tulsa, like he had a lot of people who said they thought that he was more of a stand-up 4-3 edge rusher. And we did see, as far as last year, that he played the majority of his snaps in the box. He played a lot of snaps on special teams, but he also played about, you know, 40 to 50 or so snaps on the defensive line, and that was kind of how he ended the season, was as an edge rusher. Now,
although that was COVID related, injury related, yes, more than anything else, they needed bodies, because when he played, it was very little. There was still Victor Dimakaji was getting more playing time than he was there.
Right, exactly, and some of that, like you said, I think comes into the first year and how it worked out. Part of the reason why I think it didn't work out as well was just with some of the injuries that he said he took on. He's a physical player. He ended up having injuries and ultimately said that he had issues in practice.
He had bad practices.
He didn't have good practices. They have MEs or mental errors. And if there's one thing that we've really seen with Vance Joseph as a defensive coordinator, when guys have mental errors, he just does not trust them. Like Isaiah Simmons, mental error, week one of that 2020 season, boom, he gets pulled and doesn't see the field for a long period of time.
And there's a reason for that, and Billy Davis talked about it once on a radio interview. He said, you know, while they want to play, you don't want to be out there and making mistakes, because then you feel bad and then your teammates get mad at you, and it's really a bad situation. So if you have someone who's not making mistakes, it's better for the whole team to give that other guy the opportunity. And I know that there was I can't remember what it was, but I was reading an article that came out at some point, and the Cardinals really like Tanner Vallejo. He's smart. Mm-hmm. And there was a coverage adjustment that he and Buddha made that was slightly out of scheme, according to their keys and things and what things they did and when they saw a particular look. But Tanner Vallejo made that adjustment with Buddha to make it work. And that's something you wouldn't have gotten from Saban. That said, I don't think there's a single Cardinals fan who wants to see Tanner Vallejo on the field this year.
No, absolutely. And even just in that adjustment, like you talked about, some of that maybe is just taking some of the words and pushing it a little bit far because of the expectations. Like Buda Baker last year did call stuff for the Cardinals. Obviously, there's adjustments that went on. I think the typical idea that you have of, you know, this one captain of the defense in the middle of the field analyzes stuff and puts guys in place, that's probably a little bit of a more archaic type of area. Obviously, if you've got that type of guy, then by all means, go ahead. But being able to have players who can make different adjustments, or, you know, if you've got different coverages on different sides of the field, there's going to be a lot of players who are going to have to be communicating or putting people in place. And I don't think you want to say, all right, we're going to take away Buda Baker and his ability to make an adjustment like that and give it to Zaven Collins completely and just not allow Buda to do what he's doing super well.
And Zaven said as much, that that's kind of how they had the defense set up last year, is that different players have different roles with calling things. So while Jordan, he could have called everything. By the end of last year, Jordan was looking for certain things. Vallejo was looking for certain things. And Buda was also making changes. But when it comes to lining up the front seven, you have to have your linebackers do that, because they won't hear your safeties. When someone's 15 yards off the line of scrimmage, there's no way that Rashard Lawrence or J.J. Watt's going to be able to hear what Buda's calling. And so you need someone in the up front to do that. But Zaven did say last week that the defensive play calling was a shared duty by the end of last year between the linebackers.
Right, and I think that's where ultimately what people are hoping for, I think in a lot of ways, has been more of confidence or more of being able to see that. In some case, you always want to make sure that matches the player for the most part. You know, if Collins is a guy who's upfront and honest, and that's probably something that's good about how he's learning, or even said that he had struggles and issues last year. I think that's one of the avenues for the most part, that when you're coming into year two, and I remember this back in the day of just because a player ends up being on the field for a lot of snaps or not, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, there is a success or that they knew what they were doing. I remember David Johnson coming off of an incredible rookie season, went into year two, and it's like, oh, I finally know what to do in pass protection now. And you're like, so you went an entire season essentially not knowing what you were doing in a lot of the cases, unless it was specifically pointed out. And that's, I think, the rookie learning curve, and it's part of a learning curve, I think, that just ends up going across the board. Like when you're a freshman in college, when you are, you know, a player who's learning stuff in high school, going from JV to varsity, there's always, I think, a learning curve that comes in. And for a guy out of a small school in Tulsa who ended up being a first round pick, I think that learning curve was a lot steeper, and probably steeper than Cardinals GM Steve Keim anticipated, because if Steve Keim doesn't make that comment or even is so strong as to say that Jordan Hicks will not get a chance to compete for that job, I don't think people are batting an eye for the most part about with what Collins having, you know, a typical rookie season last year. I think that the expectations that were set for him were just a little bit too high for ultimately maybe what he was capable of doing in that moment.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's close out the show and kind of cover a number of things. Winners and losers in the offseason for the Cardinals. Moves that they still need to make. What do they need to do at cornerback? That's coming up next on Rise Up Seaward. We're back on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's an interesting thing because I will say this, as opposed to Steve Wilks and Bruce Arians, Cliff Kingsbury has never been one to really openly praise individual players, and he definitely doesn't criticize them publicly. However, one player stands out as Cliff, not being asked specifically about this player, has given three times in the last week and a half very high praise to Eno Benjamin for the way he's come to the offseason. Even today, he even said he looks like a starting running back. I cannot think, considering Cliff didn't know if he was going to make the team his rookie year. He did some nice things last year, and I'm almost ready to buy the hype. I'm almost ready to buy it because guess what? Cardinals fans love Eno. He comes already with a fan base because he played at Arizona State. He was a pretty good player at ASU. And he's got a skill set that will remind you a little bit of a Chase Edmonds. It really feels like he is taking on that mentality that Chase had, because whether it was Steve Wilks or Cliff Kingsbury, Chase Edmonds earned playing time. And Eno might be in that situation this year. And I'm very excited to see it. They still brought in Darrell Williams. And I'm very interested to see, because I wasn't, even as a couple of weeks ago when I did my 53-man projection, like 53-man roster projection in June, or May and June, it's ridiculous. Yes, it is. I felt Eno still might be the odd man out, but the way Cliff's talking about him, he's going to be a force that might push himself into the alignment the way Chase Edmonds did a couple years ago.
Right. And that's one of the things that, like you said, was when the Cardinals drafted, you know, Keonta Ingram in the sixth round, a lot of people looked at James Conner as the starter and looked past it and were like, all right, he's a big back. He can catch passes. And Eno is a seventh round pick who didn't play a whole lot. Maybe this is going to be the move. But to be able to see that, you know, and I think this is something that you can give Arizona State fans credit of, being able to see some of not just the tenacity, the work ethic. Some of what I think Eno has done ultimately is put himself in a position where the coach is sharing about him, and it's not like he's being asked about him, like you said. I think that the thing that you look for as a huge positive would be if you look at how Chase Edmonds and James Conner essentially had, you know, separate roles, but as far as where they were both equally important to the team, where James, you could understand where Chase would be the guy on third down, being able to go out used as a receiver, being able to get kind of these zone carries where he would be able to use that athleticism inside. And when it's third and one, you bring in James Conner, he's going to pick up 3 yards right up the middle. And it was later in the season when we saw Chase get hurt that James Conner really showed off the passing skills. So I think that what you're talking about is if you see how James Conner got a little bit overworked, and Cliff Kingsbury even admitted as much, perhaps that means that they're going to be handing off the ball a lot more to Eno Benjamin than we think.
It'll be interesting to see, though. I do anticipate, if I have to predict how usage, I'm going to look at 2020 with Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds. I think it'll be closer to that, because last year, Chase was the guy and James was the guy. Entering this year, James is definitely the guy, the way Kenyon came in, and Chase kind of built his role little by little over the course of the year.
Right. And James, even I think, like you said, he kind of ended up earning that spot for the most part, where Cardinals fans were like, all right, here's your big back. You're going to sign your change of pace. And he made himself an invaluable part of the offense right from the get-go. So it's encouraging to hear, you know, that Eno Benjamin may be kind of taking that step forward, similar to how, like you said, Chase Edmonds, he was drafted in 2018 by the Cardinals. And in 2020, that was kind of when he showed off and was able to be that type of a, you know, dynamic player that essentially got the reins for the Cardinals job in 2021. If Eno's able to mimic that in year three, this may be a fun season for Cardinals fans who, you know, like me, were very delighted when the Cardinals did draft him with their last pick in the 2020 NFL draft. Just knowing the type of player that you were getting, that you saw just up the road in Tempe between the lines pretty much every Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you see, like, from what we've heard, now granted, this it's harder now. I will say this, it is harder to get standouts because OTAs and minicamp look different than they did 3 years ago. Traditionally, you would see a lot more 11-on-11, 7-on-7 stuff, but with the COVID stuff in 2020, where you took away the offseason, the NFLPA really kind of pushing back, I think Cliff Kingsbury has changed, and he has. Because they do very little. So OTAs is almost all drills. All drills, very little player-on-player type stuff. And minicamp, which used to be a ton of 11-on-11, that it looked a lot like a training camp practice without pads. There was very little of that. And I think that is the change. That though, what they're doing is for their 7-on-7, 11-on-11, they're doing more walkthrough things and trying to really protect the players and ramp them up slowly, which makes it really hard because then you don't get to see any of the football stuff.
Right.
All you're seeing is reps and intensity and maybe a little bit of an inside of some rotations. Is there anyone else in terms of players that are some of the winners of this offseason?
Yeah, the biggest one, I think, at least, and I know at least that it maybe we've talked about this in your show before, but Will Hernandez, at least, as far as for them bringing him in on a one-year deal with how they're counting on him, it does seem like, not only does it seem like he's assured a starter spot, but the way that it seems they've talked about him, it's almost like that if they had signed this guy to like a three-year, $30 million deal similar, it just feels like that they have a lot that they like in him. And that's going to be something that will be interesting as, you know, we get to the season, if he's able to, you know, live up to some of the confidence that's overall been there. The other one that I think that's at least maybe this is kind of a small area, and I kind of put him in both categories ultimately, was I put Antoine Wesley as a winner and a loser. It's hard to be able to say, but the re-signing of AJ Green just shows he's not a guy that's going to be like on the field for that much, as far as he's just not going to get snaps over Green. Even when Hopkins comes back, that's going to diminish probably that value even more. You've looked at the Cardinals drafting another tight end round two, how they love Max Williams when he's played. But he's at least been around as far as with some of the players, been around with Kyler, been working out with some of them in the offseason.
And he's very prominent on things that the team site shows. So he's very much part of the team. And there's a little bit of promise there. But no, like I'll be surprised if he gets 50 snaps this year. If the receiving core stays healthy, I don't see him getting much playing time at all.
Exactly. And so then it feels like you're looking then more at a guy who is a cool story. Like there's a special teams player, a guy that played with Cliff out of Texas, came in when Hopkins went down, caught a few touchdowns. And one of those guys, like, you know, if you have Antoine Wesley catches a touchdown for the Cardinals, for the most part, you're going to see a lot of fans, like, you know, start to get familiar. And these are one of those core players that, you know, you don't really kind of think about it, but they just end up making up the backbone of your team for a number of years, like your Charles Washingtons, or like you even say your Tanner Vallejos. It seems like that he's been one of those guys that maybe just kind of ends up being one of the glue guys that never ends up, you know, fully being something that you end up, you know, a lot of people look at the size and the height and want him to be more than he is. But I think that that's one of the avenues that will be interesting. The other one that I'm curious about will be, I believe the Cardinals, at least for the most part, bringing back Michael Dogby, I thought was very interesting because there's a lot of opportunity that they have there, because as far as rushing the passer, you know, Zach Allen obviously is the main guy. J.J. Watt's been a main guy, but they both have had injuries down the stretch. And you've got two rookies that you're probably got right behind Devon Kennard and Marcus Golden. It just feels kind of like with how the room is set up, I don't know if he's going to be one of those guys that like explodes. I wouldn't even say that he has a breakout year, but it does feel like for the most part that because of some of the unknown that you have overall, just being able to have him as one of those guys who I could see making the roster this year probably makes a whole lot of sense for the most part, especially, you know, considering who the competition is right now for him. Really, it's going to be some of those areas of, you're not talking about starters, you kind of know who those guys are. It's going to be maybe like the back end of the roster trying to figure out some of those guys who will stick and some of those guys who, you know, maybe moved on from, because there's not really any guarantee. But it's hard to see, you know, one of, you know, Jonathan Ward, Darrell Williams, and their sixth round pick Keonta Ingram all making the roster this year, because you've got Eno being talked up by Cliff. That's going to make it pretty difficult, I think, at least to argue for keeping five running backs.
Right, right. The other player that when I asked Cliff today, okay, he mentioned how this is the time of year young players can catch your eye. Obviously, Eno has caught his eye. Asked if there's anyone else. He mentioned Rondale Moore, and maybe this was simply because he didn't want to talk up any of the other younger players yet, but he's liked what he's seen from Rondale this offseason in terms of an expanded role where he's going to be running down the field more. Like some of the stats that we saw from last year, like his average depth of target was ridiculous. Wasn't it negative? So behind the line of scrimmage was the average spot where he got his receptions last year, and he had 54 catches, so he got the ball a pretty decent amount, but it was all behind the line of scrimmage. We're going to see a lot more of that. We're going to see a lot less of that and a lot more of Rondale doing other things, kind of playing exactly what Christian Kirk did in the type of routes that he ran. In terms of the losers of the offseason, and I wouldn't consider him a loser, just in public persona, I think if there's one person this offseason that has taken a hit, it is Kyler Murray. And it's unfair, honestly, because of the type of things that are being, because he doesn't act like the quarterbacks. He doesn't act like Carson Palmer. He doesn't act like Kurt Warner. But because of because of how the season ended, because of that absolutely atrocious report that came out of the front office, and then what his agent did, has really, sadly, soured many fans on this young quarterback who is already a top three quarterback in franchise history, pretty much.
Right, and it's been one of the things of, you never like to have these types of contract disputes, and you especially don't like to see them at the quarterback position. Fortunately, I think the Cardinals are in a spot of, like you've talked about, of, you see how Kyler wants to win, about how he's there with teammates working out. Also, I think what's interesting is seeing, you know, some of the, you know, being more involved around going like to teammate events or having other places. It just kind of feels like, you know, there was some distance that had been there before that, you know, guys like Chandler Jones were trying to make up for in some regard. And at least it feels like for the most part that it's that perception that's always going to dig back into, where people will, you know, if Kyler Murray goes out and has a 3-interception game, so there's going to be memes that people post of like a Kyler Murray, you know, ransom letter or something like that, that has like a new format in there or something. And that's the way that it's going to be for the most part. And that's, I think, one of the things that you have to do. Speaking, though, of Rondale, I didn't want to get too far away into the losers category, but I did have someone who was like involved in the coaching area for the most part, who, you know, coached in college, did in high school. Unburdened did bring up an interesting story about Rondale Moore from their experience. He talked about it at least and said, hey, like, talked to a coach about him who was a coach at Purdue for the most part, said, how good is Rondale for the most part? And he's like, all right, like, this guy was the best receiver on the team the day he arrived on campus, was a hard worker, doesn't have other types of distractions for the most part, or off-field stories. Had a whole thing where he talked about how Rondale was the star of the game against that Ohio State victory, where he had 200-plus yards. And the coach said, hey, he texted me after midnight and said, coach, I noticed in the third quarter that this block I didn't do as well at for the most part. If I change this technique or angle, I'll do better next time. So, like, you know, you're picturing that idea of a player for the most part who just had, you know, 200 plus yards as a freshman, helped get the school to one of their biggest wins in school history, and is seeking to get better on a block. So it's not like, oh, I dropped this ball, or, oh man, I should have run this route. It's, I didn't do well on blocking this guy. So that's, I think, that mentality that really, I think, shows that a lot of Cardinals fans, I think, are really hoping that Rondale will be able to take that next step. And some of that will be, hopefully you see some of that downfield usage, and we'll probably get a lot better idea in training camp as far as, are they going to see, you know, two guys used for some of the jet sweeps and you can mix and match, or you're going to see Rondale or Hollywood even slide right into kind of that Christian Kirk slot role. It's going to be interesting. You feel ultimately that injuries hurt him, and that you feel like that as a kid and as a person, you think that he's a special guy. Your hope obviously is that he develops into a special player. And it's good to hear that Cliff's talking him up in this offseason.
Positions of concern entering the summer. Obviously, we didn't have a show in the last 3 weeks, and so we didn't get to address cornerback Jeff Gladney and his tragic death. I think enough time has passed that we can now start to talk about replacements. But, oh my gosh, what? I mean, the news, when I heard it, it was, you're like, no. And two, like, how bad that was for a 25-year-old. But then, just the unfortunate way the Cardinals, for the second year in a row, the free agent that they were counting on at cornerback to be a starter, doesn't make it to the team. And aside from that's the football side, obviously it's a tragedy for anyone who knows Jeff, the Cardinals players who briefly knew him. Jalen Reagor, I know, was really broken about, former teammate at TCU. Mm-hmm. Had a nice service with a bunch of Vikings. I think I saw, what was it, a purple casket that really kind of gave him a nice touch as he spent, you know, the one season with Minnesota before he had the
TCU is where that came from too, because he was a Horned Frog.
Ah, that's true.
Purple. So
that's
true. It was a purple,
they went both ways.
Connection. Yeah,
it went both ways. So that was a nice touch. But it does leave the Cardinals in a bit of a lurch now. I mean, you couldn't foresee that happening. They were really excited about him. And interesting, Vance Joseph had kind of said what his role. He was going to be Robert Alford because he was going to be their third corner, coming in and Nicolette. I mean, he would have played in the slot. He could, but it felt like he was just going to slide into that Rob Alford role, for a guy who actually physically and stylistically is kind of a younger Robert Alford, which, with now him being gone, makes a lot of sense if they bring Alford back. Although there are a number of other older cornerbacks that they could address. If there's one position I would be shocked if they don't address, they're going to have to address cornerback. I'd like to see them do something at outside linebacker, but I have no idea if that's going to actually happen.
Right. It feels like, at least, and I kind of lean back to the 2015 season at linebacker for kind of rushing the edge. If the Cardinals were in it, they could make a trade or be able to bring someone in. We saw the Rams do the exact same thing with giving up a pick and getting a Super Bowl with Von Miller for the most part. It does kind of just feel like it's another one of these type of tragic deaths that we've already had going on in the offseason. I'm glad he's 25 years old and leaves behind a son, and I don't want to avoid or kind of just focus only on the football portion of that, because, you know, it's just, there's a lot of pain that comes up.
It's just sad.
And it's even more sad, like you said, as Vance can even say, it's not like that, you know, they brought him in to be a guy that's just like as a side player or something. It's like they wanted him to be a featured part of the defense and had him on a 2-year deal. And it puts the Cardinals in a bit of an area where now you're looking at, you know, whether it's extensions or not, they at least had a plan in place, and we're hoping to have a plan in place for the most part. If they weren't able to, you know, afford Byron Murphy, similar to a Christian Kirk extension, you at least, all right, well, cool, we've got this guy here that's a former first rounder. And it does, like you said, put them in a bit of a lurch, because the there's not a lot of bodies that are out there at this point that
there
are
all
similar
question marks. All question marks.
They also, even when you talk about the Malcolm Butler signing, it was early enough in the offseason that the head cap room, they assigned it. They had already checked that box with Gladney, and that was why they didn't pursue like a Malcolm Butler type later in the year. So it really does kind of end up feeling like it's a spot where, you know, you'll see how it goes. Alfred, I think, makes a ton of sense. Really, it just depends on how they want to shape their defense, because it may leave them in a spot if they may want to have Byron Murphy be, you know, play a bit more on the slot or move to the outside. He may have to kind of play some of that Alfred role, and you have to go out and bring in a guy who isn't quite as flexible on defensive side or gets pulled out. And, you know, each of those guys, like you said, all have question marks, and really is just going to put, I think, a lot of pressure on Vance Joseph. As if there wasn't enough already, he's going to have to essentially, you know, and this, what's sad about this too, I think, is it's not even just essentially the player that you take off, but, you know, it's the person as well. The attitude that you have of the team and the friends, it's very different from a player who's lost to an injury, because you still have the places and the connections. Like,
yeah, he's still in the building, he's rehabbing.
Max Williams, you know, he I think at least for the most part would talk with other players, and Zaven Collins would text, still says he texts to this day with Jordan Hicks, even though he's a Vikings player. So it just ends up being that loss that you feel. And I think that the biggest thing for me, I think, is, you know, if the Cardinals want to go to Robert Alford, and he's kind of put a couple of, you know, more cryptic tweets out there indicating
makes it
that
look
he's
like
ready.
He's on the comeback.
Yeah, he makes it look like he's like, hey, I'm ready to play, let's go. And it feels like a lot of the areas, I think, for Arizona is going to be, do you kind of have to pull in more of like this 1 year type of Band-Aid scenario that, you know, Robert Alford kind of has been with this 1 year deal for last year? Or are you going to be kind of having to put a precedence on, you know, a cornerback hire for the future? Like, cause honestly, you know, if the Cardinals knew that something like this would happen with Jeff Gladney, would they have, you know, potentially, you know, taken a corner with that second, third round pick, or maybe used one of those picks to move up? Or it's all of these places right now. And all you can really kind of do, at least, is say, now that we're done mourning, you have to look at just how, you know, you don't want to go into use expletives at least, but you kind of are screwed at the position for the most part in the short term, and you're going to have to find a way to adjust. And here's hoping that the Cardinals are able to unlock a gem that can come in and be able to man that spot. And I wouldn't be shocked if that gem is hopefully a healthy Robert Alford, and we'll see who else it might be.
All right. And with this, we will end this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode 358, with a big, big thanks to Blake Murphy from the Revenge of the Birds podcast. So I am of the belief that there are more than enough podcasts for everyone. So if you listen to this show, you can definitely listen to Blake's show as well. There is plenty of listening content out there that you don't have to only listen to me. So by all means, check out Revenge of the Birds podcast as well. Blake Murphy joining us. Not quite sure when their next show will be, as I think it'll probably be, since we're hitting the end of minicamp, we probably won't have a regular show with Seth until our training camp preview, provided that there is some news. If there's a contract extension, that'll probably change things. But our next shows will probably, in the weeks to come, will be our opponent preview shows, as I will get those lined up over the next few weeks. The Cardinals opponents, I will do a segment, I will do a part of a show with one of the writers that covers those teams, something I've done the last couple of years. I really enjoy the episodes, but those are probably the next shows that you will have. And the next time we hear from Seth probably will be our training camp preview, unless there's news before that. Again, that's Blake Murphy stepping in for Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Make sure you check out Blake's show. Make sure you just, you know, if you haven't subscribed to the show yet, come on, let's do it. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back again with you guys soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Roll!